Radio.
Croatia's success in defending marriage. An interview with Vice Bartarello at the Life and Family National Conference 2016. So I'm joined today with Vincent Bartarello. Thank you for joining me, Vincent.
Thank you.
Now, of course, you were born here in Australia and grew up here in Australia. However, that's not actually why you're here. It's because of your work in Croatia. Mm-hmm. Now, not a lot of people in Australia know about there was a referendum concerning the definition of marriage in Croatia only a couple of years ago now, which the result was that marriage is between a man and a woman, and that mm-hmm. is enshrined in the constitution of Croatia. And you were very much a centerpiece of that and of that victory mm-hmm. for the definition of marriage. Do you want to tell me a little bit, I guess, firstly about the background to that? How did it come about?
Okay, well, yes, first of all, as you said, I am originally from Australia, Sydney boy. Went to school here, went to uni here, and then popped off to Croatia, fell in love, got married, and stayed in Croatia. So, and this trip now, it's not a tourist trip, even though I love coming back to Australia. I was invited over by Family Life International Australia to talk at this very good national conference of theirs in regards to the referendum, the marriage referendum. And I think the important thing is if a little Croatia, Croatia is 4.2 million people, it has a Catholic background, but it has gone through the horrors of a communist regime. And so the Catholics were, in essence, kind of second-grade citizens there, and they're quite passive. And I actually understand that passivity because, you know, during communism, you know, if you lifted your head up, you either would have been shot, you would have been jailed, or you immigrated out. So Croatian society is very much in flux. It's a post-communist society. So the government in 2012, the socialist government, when they came in, they came in on the wave of promising economic reform. They didn't do any economic reform, but what they did do is they started another cultural revolution. And it all started, first of all, with a very liberal type of IVF program, in which we gathered 130,000 signatures against that legislation. After that came the introduction of sex ed through the health ministry. And of course, this sex ed program was unbelievably liberal sex ed, done by people trained at the Kinsey Institute in the United States, made up by left wing, feminist, gay type of organizations, who provided the literature for this horrible, horrible type of a program. So we basically mobilized and galvanized the Catholic and the conservative population in Croatia. We had parent meetings all around the country. We got parents included. We got students. We got young people included just to see what was happening. We had parents take children out of these classes. We had parents signing official documents stating they did not want their children going to these sex ed classes. So this is basically the build-up towards the big question, the big referendum, which was the marriage referendum. Why? Because we had early signs coming from certain socialist ministers stating that by the end of their mandate, they were going to allow so-called gay couples to be able to adopt children. They were going to prepare society to be able to accept this. So especially us who are from the diaspora, who are from outside of Croatia, especially from the Western world, and my very close friends from Canada and America and Australia who live in Croatia, we picked this up immediately. And so together we formed an alliance with the local Croats, and we said, you know, we've got to work on this. And, you know, we had brainstorming sessions, and we decided we would go for a referendum, because in Croatia, the people, the citizens, can actually seek a referendum if they get 10% of the whole voting population. So approximately we needed to gain 400,000 signatures in 15 days. That's stipulated by law. A lot of the left-wing government and the left-wing media, they thought we wouldn't be able to do it. We did. And within 15 days, we raised 750,000 signatures, 6,000 volunteers, using very much the structures of the church. I mean, the bishops and the priests were very, very helpful. But I have to stress, this was a lay initiative, and we used secular arguments. So we didn't use religious arguments in public. We got that, and then this government was forced to declare a referendum. And then On the 1st of December 2013, there was a referendum. Two-thirds of Croatians voted in favor of enshrining in the constitution that marriage is between a man and a woman. So that was a great victory. It was difficult. The battle was difficult. But we used all of our resources, all of our knowledge, all of our networks. It really was a galvanizing mobilization of the whole Catholic and conservative population, and that population saw that victory is possible. I think that's the best thing out of everything. So we defended the definition of marriage, and these people finally could raise their head and say, "All right, yes, we did it. That was a great victory." So, and of course, I think it also has global repercussions around the world. People who follow these things, because I know it wasn't in the mainstream media, as I said, you know, certain mainstream media in Australia did not carry that story, but there have been great victories in Europe. Just about a month and a half ago, you had the little country of Slovenia next door to Croatia, another referendum. They rejected the leftist government, who also wanted to make the possibility of these revisionist marriages, as they say, to quote, gay marriages. The Slovenians rejected that as well. So actually what you're seeing in Europe, now spreading out a little bit further afield outside of Croatia, you're seeing a whole, if you want, frontline of a conservative traditional Europe spreading from the Baltic states down to the Adriatic. So I'm talking about Poland, Hungary, Slovakia, Czech Republic, Estonia, Lithuania, Latvia, Croatia, Slovenia, all basically joining up and rejecting this gender mainstreaming, if you will, this LGBT agenda. And we got into the fight, and we're getting into the fight, and we're saying, right, we live in a democracy. It's all right. I mean, you can live the way you want, but we will not have you changing our indoctrinating, and we said very clearly, we will not have you indoctrinating our children, nor will we have these things in our law that you steal the whole institution of marriage. So, you know, these are the children, this leftist agenda, you know, these are the children of the sexual revolution who basically destroyed all institutions. Now, all of a sudden, they want the marriage. They want marriage as an institution. I mean, they actually don't want marriage as an institution. We all know that much deeper forces are acting here to basically destroy the whole essence of family. So once you destroy marriage, you destroy family, you destroy society, and you have atomized individuals around, and then you have to have strong governments, totalitarian governments, who control these. But anyway, that's going a little bit too far.
No. It is good to hear about a victory, though. It's not often we do hear about victories, and it's great to hear here within Europe that we are seeing that kind of thing happen. I guess my question to you next would be, what do you think are the top things that you thought ensured victory in this situation within your campaign?
Yeah, of course, because I am in Australia, I think it is important, and especially since Australians now are preparing for this great fight, and it is a great fight. First of all, I think you need highly knowledgeable and formed leaders and people who are not scared of controversy. They need to be strong people, because in the midst of the fight, the tension is great. You do feel lonely at times, and you will be attacked, hopefully not physically, but you and your family will be attacked. And we know the tactics of the other side. So people need to be prepared for that. They also need to capture the imagination of young people. You need to have a lot of volunteers there as well. So I think they're the two things which we uncovered. And once you create that network, it's basically unstoppable. And you need people with charisma who will wake up other people. And, you know, so it's not only the leaders who will lead a certain alliance here in Australia, and people are not allowed to throw their responsibility onto a group of people. Each one of us at our work, and that's what we did, each one of us in our workplaces, with our friends, with our relatives, you know, stating and going out and talking about the referendum. And as I stated also in my talk, you will lose some friends because of that, but we have to look, because, you know, we can't be good with everyone. I mean, we have to defend the truth. And the truth sometimes is difficult. But that's why we are called to defend the truth and to defend what is right. So to have a good organization with people with charisma, who know how to speak to the media, who know how to just get a lot of young people, a lot of people infused about this whole idea, I think that that's the most important thing.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned also in one of the talks that I heard you just earlier at this conference, you're speaking about how it's important to not necessarily buy into the political correctness, that kind of element of politeness or possibly false politeness that we have today in our society.
Yes.
Yet at the same time, maintaining gentlemanly or ladylike behavior. Do you want to tell me a little bit more about that and how that was good within your campaign?
Yeah. One of the things which the opposition likes to do is dehumanize the people on our side. So what we need to do always is not be, you know, angry and rigid type of people, but to be people, you know, with a smile. And when we do talk and when we meet up with people, that we are gentlemen, that we are ladylike. Because good manners are actually a sign of high civilization. All people who have studied history and sociology of civilizations will know that. So we need to maintain that. And an interesting thing, which, you know, when I'm talking in Croatia, I never talk about the enemy or on the other side. I talk about our friends on the left. So even though we may disagree about a lot of things, in the end, we are human beings. We don't have to disagree. We don't have to agree on a lot of things, but we must maintain our Christian manners, I would say.
You also spoke about within that talk earlier the element of that we're not dealing with flesh and blood. We are dealing with the powers and principalities, and of course, being a very Catholic battle, a very Christian battle, there are the elements there of the spiritual warfare.
Oh, yeah.
Why is that important, and how can we engage in that in a way that would help ensure that victory?
I think the whole underlying element of this battle and of our victory was that element, the spiritual element and the prayer element. And I would say, as I mentioned just a little while ago, great, you know, having the networks and having good leaders and whatever. But we do have to realize, as many people who are in this battle, this is a battle against the powers and principalities of evil. So I think we need to realize that. We need to have groups of people praying. We need the contemplative orders. And all of us as Catholics, and especially as Catholics, we believe in the real presence. We believe that Jesus is here with us. And so if you have that supernatural view, then all of these other worldly things become quite easy, actually. And actually, I have to state that, as you know, although there were very difficult times, we had a great time doing this, you know, because we know that we are sons and daughters of the Most High Lord, and you know, we have God behind us. So you know, we're going to go in for this. We believe in our victory. But, you know, even if we don't get these worldly victories, we know that we are doing the will of the Father, and I think that's extremely important. Not to fall back into complacency and to say, well, someone else will do that. Or that very, very, I mean, you know, that term, she'll be right, mate. No, she won't be right. You need to get up and you need to ask yourself in front of God, what can I do? First of all, you need to have a prayer life. You need to have a prayer life, a spiritual life. Go to Mass often as much as possible, especially Sunday. You know, seek this power. I mean, all the great spiritual writers have stated this, and all the great reformers within the church throughout the centuries have been people of great spirituality, of a great prayer life. So if you have a prayer life, I think things will go fine in this campaign. It won't be easy, but you'll be able to endure the difficulties.
Mm. Now, Australia, of course, has around about less than a year until there is a real moment in which this comes to a head, and that is potentially after a possible early election, that there could be a plebiscite on this issue. So really is the time to act is now. What can a listener who's sitting at home, what can they do right now or in the near future to help get things started?
That's a very good question. I think what they can do, and I know there's been a lot of talk here. First of all, the coordination here in Australia needs to be much more stronger and much more visible. as much as possible within the mainstream, especially within the Catholic societies, and but in the Catholic community, but not only the Catholic community, we've been talking here going into all the ethnic communities. But what can a person do if they're a younger person? Get onto the Facebook immediately and click a like for the Marriage Alliance. Download their information. Know the arguments. Learn the arguments. Maybe for our older listeners, speak to the local parish priest. Ask what, seek and engage the parish priest to become involved in the whole act, and to talk to relatives, to talk to grandchildren, to talk to other people about this, and not to shy away, and not to be complacent. I think that's the most important thing. And also this talkback radio, getting involved in talkback radio, wherever you can, whatever your status in life, talk about these things. I know some of my friends, the Australian Croatians here, I know that I know a lot of major Australian companies have come out in favor of this revisionist type of view of marriage. I know one friend who's gone away from a very big insurance company. I'm not sure if I can mention their names.
Probably not. No.
Probably not. Okay. A very big insurance company which deals with when your car breaks down. Anyway, so he's taking away all of his policy and giving it to another major company which is not supporting this revisionist view. So you can do those types of things as well. So just look around, think about these things and get involved as much as possible.
Wonderful. And of course, as you did mention, we are here at the Life and Family National Conference, and your talk and many other talks will be available for sale, and we'll have the details on our website. But thank you very much, Vincent. First of all, of course, for all your work that you've done in Croatia and for coming out here to speak to us. So thank you.
Thank you, Luke, and God bless all your listeners as well.
Thank you.
That was an interview with Vice Bartarello on Croatia's success in defending marriage. For more interviews, talks, and shows, visit cradio.org.au.